Hello and welcome to the Innovation Forum podcast for Friday 13th December with me, Ian Welsh. Coming up is a fascinating discussion I had recently with C.B. Bhattacharya, Zoffer Chair in Sustainability and Ethics at the Katz Graduate School of Business, University of Pittsburgh, and author of the new book, Small Actions, Big Difference. We talked about how some companies are working hard to change the way they work to be more sustainable and to leverage greater value. But first is a regular roundup of some sustainable business news. UK retailer Tesco is launching a new pilot scheme in 2020 to help measure better the environmental impacts of food in its stores. Working with WWF, Tesco will apply a sustainable basket metric to a selection of representative foods and then track scores to monitor the progress of its sustainability efforts. The metric will include elements such as a product's climate impact and on deforestation, packaging and food waste. For example, for beef products, the issues Tesco has identified are methane emissions from cattle, deforestation in South America from soy, and how farmers are taking action on soil health. The basket is made up of 20 popular products, including bananas, tomatoes, milk, cola, eggs, and Tesco's own label ham sandwich. The retailer has science-based targets in line with keeping climate change within 1.5 Celsius of warming and is committed to cutting direct emissions by 60% by 2025. Tesco aims to be net zero emissions as a company by 2050. In fact, it's been a busy week for Tesco with news that it is part of a coalition to help support soy farmers in the Brazilian Cerrado region to protect native vegetation and encourage them to only grow crops on existing agricultural land. Tesco has committed £10 million to the Funding for Soy Farmers in the Cerrado initiative. Other food news this week involves avocados, specifically avocados with an edible coating, which are now on sale in some European supermarkets. The spray-on coating helps the avocados stay riper for longer, controlling the rate at which water escapes and oxygen enters. The scheme is designed to cut the use of plastic packaging, which traditionally keeps the products fresher for longer. The coating's inventors at Apiol Sciences say that the product keeps avocados at prime ripeness for 4 to 6 days rather than 2 to 3. The human rights risks for thousands of migrant workers in India's factories has been highlighted with the deaths of 43 in a factory fire in New Delhi. Workers making bags and toys were, Reuters reports, sleeping when the fire took hold. Emergency services were apparently hampered from reaching the scene to help because of the congested lane where the factory was located. More than 400 people in India are thought to be in the informal employment sectors, including farm labourers, construction workers and those in the hospitality sector, having to operate in hazardous conditions. The UN COP25 climate conference has been ongoing in Madrid this week, and the International Union for the Conservation of Nature has presented some concerning research into oxygen levels being lost from oceans at unprecedented rates as a result of climate change and intensive agriculture. Warmer oceans contain less oxygen, and the IUCN says that large fish such as sharks, tuna and marlin are particularly at risk. These species are being forced to live near the surface, where oxygen levels are greater, making them more susceptible to fishing. Some species of ocean creatures, including jellyfish and squid, are less vulnerable to low oxygen levels, meaning that ecosystems in different oceans will become unbalanced. Scientists predict that oceans may lose up to 4% of current oxygen by the end of the century, with the impacts greatest in the mid to high latitudes. Finally, the Global Reporting Initiative has launched a new tax reporting standard, seeking to ensure that multinationals are clearer about how much tax they pay and where they pay it. GRI says it has developed the tax standard in response to concerns over the impact of tax avoidance on the ability of governments to fund services and support sustainable development. Innovation Forum's 2020 programme is taking shape. On the 18th and 19th of March, we'll be back in London for the Ethical Trade and Human Rights Forum. Our New York Human Rights and Business event is on the 5th and 6th of May, and discounts of $600 and 2-day passes are available if you register before the 20th of December next week. On the 28th and 29th of April, we'll be back in Amsterdam for the next in our Sustainable Apparel and Textiles Conference series. And we will be convening the 2020 Future of Food US Forum in Minneapolis on the 27th and 28th of May. We'll be holding the London Future of Food event on the 2nd and 3rd of June. And you can save £500 in passes if you sign up before the close of business on the 13th of December. Check out the Innovation Forum website for full details. A few days ago, I spoke with Professor C.B. Bhattacharya, Zoffer Chair in Sustainability and Ethics at the Katz Graduate School of Business, University of Pittsburgh, about the state of business and sustainability and the conclusions from his new book, Small Actions, Big Difference. You're the author of the new book, Small Actions, Big Difference, Levering Corporate Sustainability to Drive Business and Societal Value. What are the key headline conclusions from your new book?
The headline conclusions would be that sustainability, which is the well-being of our planet and its people, belongs to the center of any company's operations and not the periphery, as it is currently wont to do in many, many companies. Sustainability touches every part of an organization from procurement to disposal. And thus, it needs engagement from every employee and potentially every stakeholder that an organization has in order for the organization to make the rapid progress that we need in this sphere. So what my book does, it articulates how a company can onboard all its employees and its stakeholders onto the sustainability journey and how it can engage them in making business decisions through the lens of sustainability. And I go on to show that in companies where every employee is engaged in this mission, those are the companies that do better. And every action counts, hence the title, Small Actions, Big Difference.
So when you say these are the companies that perform better, what sort of direct evidence do you have for that? Any examples?
One example that might resonate with your listeners is the case of Unilever. And Unilever has made quite some strides in sustainability. And in Unilever, sustainability is every employee's responsibility, no exceptions. What has happened as Unilever has made tremendous progress, not only on the social and environmental front, but as well on the business front. They are more profitable than their counterparts in that industry, consumer products industry. More interestingly, perhaps, their employees are highly engaged, with industry employee engagement numbers hovering around kind of 15%, according to some Gallup polls that we know. Unilever has employee engagement that's close to 80%. And as I spoke to then CEO Paul Pullman, he said, we can be doing a lot of things wrong in any particular situation, but with that level of employee engagement, we'll always find a way to be successful. So this is one concrete example of a company that has onboarded its employees into its sustainability mission, and it has more energy in the organization. It has tremendous appeal for young job seekers. It has tremendous reputation in the marketplace and higher profits, happier employees, all the good things that a company wants.
It strikes me there's been a lot of work done by companies to find the right goals, and companies are going about setting them. Do you think that's the case? Maybe the problem has been more about going about achieving them the wrong way rather than the wrong goal setting.
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head. This is something that I argue in my book, that companies have never before been more conscious of the need to be sustainable, of the need to integrate environmental and social concerns into their business decisions. But many of them don't know the right way to implement those goals. And there are a couple of things I can point out in this regard. One is that many, many companies still believe that sustainability is the next iteration of corporate social responsibility, or CSR, as we call it. And this is simply not true. This is a myth that needs to be dispelled. CSR is what a company does out of its sense of social responsibility. And it's okay for that to be departmentalized within an organization. However, sustainability deals with the very survival of the organization, which is an entirely different proposition. And sustainability becomes everybody's job. So to equate sustainability to CSR, first of all, is a wrong thing to do. The second trap that companies fall into is to believe that something like change management, which is kind of every company's favorite thing to do, can be a panacea for sustainability. Okay, so we'll just get some change management experts to build a sustainability system for us. Actually, it's not that straightforward, because sustainability goes to what the philosophy of business is, kind of why do we do what we do? Change management does not ask those kinds of questions. Change management is all about maximizing profits, you know, lean quality and lean manufacturing, all this kind of stuff. And therefore, unless we take a step back and realize that the sustainability domain or the sustainability landscape is really broader and deeper to begin with, and we have to start by asking that question about corporate purpose, if we are to be successful in the sustainability journey, not much progress is going to be made. So between these two major myths, not to mention the myth of short-termism and wanting to maximize profits in the short term, that also holds companies back. The first two I mentioned, I would say, are the major myths that we need to dispel in industry to be able to make solid progress.
In the book, you talk about how companies should link corporate sustainability with profit and employee engagement better. And you describe a three-phase path to ownership of sustainability. There's incubate, launch, and entrench. Can you just take us through the key points at each stage of this path?
Sure. The first stage is incubate, which really goes back to that issue of purpose or defining a corporate purpose, as I mentioned before. To incubate the process, there are two steps. One is that difficult task, but very necessary task of defining your corporate purpose. And second, defining some concrete goals that your company is going to address to fulfill that purpose. So in other words, every company does not need to run after greenhouse gas emissions and water and waste and all of that. A consulting company might be very, very different from a heavy manufacturing company. So a company needs to do something called a materiality analysis based on its corporate purpose. It needs to do that materiality analysis to find out what are the top two or three priorities that not only do the stakeholders of the company believe it should go after, but as well, the senior management and the employees of the company believe that is important for the company. So that materiality analysis tells us the top two or three things, which, for example, for that heavy machinery company might be the greenhouse gases, whereas for a financial services company might be cybersecurity and so on. That's incubate. So you define your purpose and you come up with some concrete goals. Then you launch your program. That's the next phase, where you really onboard your employees into the sustainability program. And there are two phases. One has to do with motivation. How do I build motivation? I call that entice. And there we have to kind of appeal to the head of the employees. Oh, this is a smart thing to do business-wise. Or we have to appeal to the heart. Oh, this is the right thing to do given where we are in our existential crisis. Or oftentimes both, different strokes for different folks. And then it's not enough to build motivation. We also have to build ability. And that stage I call empower. That's where we train our employees. We install management systems in our company and do everything possible to lower the costs of acting sustainably and increase the benefits of acting sustainably. And that can be through promotions, through financial incentives, and what have you. After the launch comes the entrench phase, which is what makes sustainability decision-making routine or second nature for employees. And there I outline three specific steps. One I call demystify, which is to give feedback to your employees on the progress they're making on sustainability goals via metrics and KPIs and so on. The second step is called enliven, which means to keep the culture of sustainability fresh in the company through communication, through celebration, through co-creation of initiatives with employees. And the third step is called expand, where we expand our sense of ownership, sustainability ownership, by collaborating with our traditional competitors, because no one company can solve these wicked problems or the tragedy of the commons problems, as we call them, things like deforestation and e-waste and so on. So we collaborate, and that's how we bring up the whole industry rather than just solving pockets of the problem. So in totality, these three steps, if the company undertakes them systematically, I mean, obviously it's not linear. I mean, there are iterations all the way through. But if a company kind of buys into this process and undertakes this journey, it surely will be at a different place in its sustainability progress compared to when it started.
It strikes me also that it's all about companies interrogating themselves and asking questions of themselves and what they do. If, say, companies are asking the wrong questions now or have been asking the wrong questions, what do you think the process of change to finding the right questions looks like?
The process of change to finding the right questions would again be to go back to that first point that I mentioned about asking yourself that question of why do we do what we do. Now, everybody might not like going through that process because the belief in our business world is that business exists for maximizing profits. Going on a sustainability journey of the kind that I am kind of proposing is very counter to that viewpoint. Every company needs to understand that profit is the consequence of value creation. So we don't start with maximizing profits. We start with trying to maximize value. And we start by maximizing value for all stakeholders, not just our shareholders. Once this idea, this very, very powerful idea, is solidified in the top leadership's mind, then I think the rest can follow. This is the place where most of us stumble, thinking that the purpose of a business is to maximize profits. That's the first myth that we have to dispel.
What are the key small actions that make the big difference then?
So the key small actions are putting on that lens of sustainability for every employee, potentially every stakeholder that an organization has. Every time an employee makes a business decision, whether he or she be in the mailroom or in the boardroom, he or she must ask, what does this decision do to the environment? What does this decision do to society? It could be throwing away paper when it should be recycled, or it could be buying a piece of material that you're going to use in your packaging. It could be researching new ingredients that you're going into your product. It could be something to do with disposal. Wherever you are, and remember, these large companies have thousands and thousands of employees strewn all over the world. If they have that lens of sustainability, whenever they're making those decisions, individual decisions, I mean, they see something wrong with a valve, they tweak it. It all adds up. It all adds up. So at the end, regardless of where you are in the organization, if doing the green thing or doing the sustainable thing is part of your job, that will accumulate to make a much larger impact for the organization. And I've seen firsthand in companies that actually are able to do that. The key step here is what I propose in the book. I mean, it's called taking ownership of sustainability. Because when we take ownership of something, we are committed to making that thing better and to take good care of it. So I propose ownership, psychological ownership, as a construct that kind of drives these behaviors on the part of employees and other stakeholders. And ultimately, those behaviors add up to transition the company to a sustainable business model.
Thank you. It's been fascinating insights from your new book, all the changes you're talking about. It'll be amazing. Great to see how this develops over the course of the coming years. But thank you for now, Professor C.B. Bhattacharya, for your insights today.
Thank you, Ian, for having me.
Remember that there is plenty of content available online at innovationforum.co.uk. Look out for a great end-of-year op-ed from our regular commentator, Paul Honan, about some of the big challenges for 2020. And the first in a new series of podcasts about the Accountability Framework Initiative. All available for free, no paywalls at Innovation Forum. But that's all for now. I've been Ian Welsh, and I'll be back next week.